thanks to the IKGF for hosting me here or giving me the possibility to work on a totally new project. And I moved, Tosaka Jun died in 1945, and I moved to the time Tosaka died into the post-war Japan with this project. A little disclaimer, this project is not only new, it also kind of evolved out of teaching. So I'm usually confronted with popular culture in Japanese studies through my students, who are more experts of popular culture than I could ever be. So my intention is to kind of engage with popular culture, but with a very subjective or very personal perspective, and that is the perspective of philosophy. So the idea behind this project is to think of ways that one could imagine popular culture as philosophy or as thought, as I will try to argue in the first part of my paper. So I have four sections. The first is kind of giving you an overview of the period I will deal with in my project, 1945 to 90. Then I will try to define science fiction as thought. And then I'll give you one very particular example of works that I'm looking at. I'll do a very close reading of Abe Kobo's science fiction novel Into Ice Age 4, and then I hope I'll give you some conclusions and an outlook on the whole project in the end. In socio-philosophical or socio-psychological historiography in Japan, it is not uncommon to divide the first 5 decades of Japan's post-war history into 3 periods. The periods of ideals, 1945 to 60, the period of dreams, 1960 to 75, and a period of fiction, 1975 to 1995. Mita Muneske, a well-known Japanese sociologist who first coined this periodization, understood ideals, dreams, and fictions as a generally shared consciousness or mentality or zeitgeist at a particular period in the sense of a future-oriented counter-reality, Hangenjitsu. Opposing the given contemporary reality of the respective period. In the first period of ideals, the horizon of expectation, opposing the space of existence, and these are two concepts I take from Reinhard Koselleck's work, was the divide between the ideal, or maybe one should rather say ideology, of a liberal democracy modeled after the United States on the one hand, and the ideal of a future communist society on the other. This divide between these two opposing ideologies overshadowed particularly the political and intellectual atmosphere from the years of US American occupation until the Anpo unrest in 1960, and it is the struggles against the renovation of the American-Japanese Security Treaty. Despite it was in the end of the former of the two ideals, it was in the end the former of the two ideals that prevailed in Japan. The latter, socialism or communism, at least for a brief moment in Japanese history, was considered a realistic political and social alternative to liberal democracy. Particularly at the time when Katayama Tetsu was elected the first and, for the time being, only socialist prime minister in Japan in 1974. The subsequent period, the period of dreams, refers to a period when counter-realities were more and more limited to the consumerist dream of an American way of life, filled with electric appliances such as washing machines, refrigerators, and television sets. The growing affluence of the 1960s was substantiated and propelled by drastic economic growth and political stability initiated in 1955 by the beginning of a more than 40 years lasting rule of the conservative Liberal Democratic Party in Japan. In the period of fiction, this progress towards the consumer society brought about a new postmodern system of capitalism, which promoted the self-production of the consumer market, that is, the creation of artificial demand through information. After the oil shock in 1973, supported by a highly speculative real estate bubble, materialist consumer dreams of household electrification were replaced by the consumption of self-sufficient and hyper-real simulacra created by the tremendously grown advertising business, which were also responsible for the transformation of whole urban quarters into ultra-consumerist stages of conspicuous consumption, such as here in Shibuya. Advertised super futuristic housing projects like in Tama City close to Tokyo, or co-organized the outright postmodernist World Expo in Osaka in 1970. It is Mita's key assumption that these counter-realities gradually disconnected from social reality. Whereas people living in the first two periods, the period of ideals in particular, people had no doubts about the importance and existence of a social political reality, because reality itself was considered as something that could be changed in accordance to counterfactual ideological ideals or consumerist dreams. This realistic stance towards reality changed into indifference towards reality during the craziness of the hyperreal and self-sufficient postmodern period of fiction in Japan in the 1970s and 80s. Particularly the ideals of the first period, namely liberal democracy and communism, both based on the theological imagination of progress, since they shared a future-oriented view of history based on a utopian view of a better future society, nameless a classless or liberal society. Moreover, even the consumerist dreams of the second period, despite aiming merely at a realization on a very individual level entirely disconnected from any idea of a more sophisticated social utopia, the consumerist dream of the American way of life was in fact the result of an economic miracle produced by producing very materialistic consequences, namely rapid industrialization, with all its palpable downsides, such as pollution, urbanization, or rural depopulation. By contrast, the economic growth that triggered the consumerism of the period of fiction was mainly based on fictional stock exchange trading and rapidly rising real estate prices. It is said that at the peak of the real estate bubble in the 1980s, the 1.32 square mile of ground of Imperial Palace in the center of Tokyo were already worth more than all real estates in California combined. In opposition to the sinking importance, or some would even argue total absence, of future-related counter-realities in the field of politics or social and philosophical thought in recent times, the rather rich and productive science fictional field in Japan, including literature and popular culture, continuously produced utopian or dystopian counter-realistic imaginations, often including explicitly or implicitly criticisms of contemporary society. However, in an effort to revisit those works of science fiction, it is important to agree upon a definition of philosophically or politically valuable science fiction, serving as a yardstick to decide which works could be considered worth revisiting in my research. Put differently, what one urgently needs is in the first place a working definition of what I would then call, in quotation, serious science fiction. According to the general definition of the Japanese term thought or shiso, which is neither congruent with the meaning of philosophy nor simply referring to the act of thinking in a very broad sense, thought can be defined as coherent thinking or an opinion related to existence and society, and thus political or social criticism of society in particular. Japanese historian Najita Tetsuo therefore defined thought as, and I quote, self-reflective statements about the character of the social universe, including those coming not only from philosophy or academia, but those produced in the fields as wide as literature, movies, or any other form of popular culture. Moreover, science fiction as a genre has at least two very unique characteristics, which differentiates the genre from other subgenres of speculative fiction. Namely, it A, deals with almost exclusively with the future, and that is B, scientific. This is also almost, let's say, self-explanatory if you deal with science fiction. But if one understands science fiction in a narrow way as a literature genre that produces speculative but scientifically realistic projections of the future, namely works including, this means one has to exclude words including elements of fantasy and mystery from the outset. This very definition is often defined as hard science fiction, which is commonly defined as a form, and I quote, of imaginative literature that uses either established or carefully extrapolated science as its backbone, according to science fiction critic Alan Steele. According to Dietmar Dart, another science fiction critic and science fiction writer himself, science fiction prolongs certain facts and tendencies of aesthetic, social, economic, or political contemporary life into the future, unfolds spaces of possibility in which one is enabled to narrate imaginable but unreal stances towards reality, namely fiction, and it does so by extensively drawing on existing scholarship or science dealing with this reality. Based on the aforementioned definitions of thought and hard science fiction, one might formulate the following definition as science fiction as thought. Science fiction is defined as a self-reflective or critical thought of possible future societies, extrapolated from current political, social, cultural, and scientific conditions in the present. Moreover, science fiction possesses, according to another group of critics, a non-diegetic moment beyond the level of the concrete science fictional narration presented in a particular work. By presenting to its audience or readership scientifically possible utopian or dystopian futures that could potentially emanate from our own present, hard science fiction is then about the emotional experience of describing and confronting what is scientifically true. Therefore, Marxist literary critic Frederick Jameson argues that the speculative but scientifically realistic narrations of possible futures represented in science fiction are able to cause what he calls disruptions of the present. Abe Kobo, one of the most prolific literary figures of post-war Japan, a longtime candidate for the Nobel Prize, known to the general public more for his existentialist writing, but also the author of a number of novels and short stories of the hard science fiction genre, considers exactly this disruptive moment of science fiction, which pulls one out of the dull routine of everyday life by reminding us of the future and its contingency as the most important aspect of science fiction. In the postscript to the science fiction novel Inter Ice Age 4, which I will discuss in detail later, Abe stated the following. The future gives a verdict of guilty, yūzai no senkoku, to the usual continuity of daily life. I consider the problem an especially important theme in these critical times. Thus I decided to try to grasp the image of a future that intrudes on the present, jinyu. A future that sits in judgment, our usual sense of continuity fades away the instant it faces the future. In order to understand the future, it is not enough simply to be living in the present. We must be clearly aware that the greatest of all sins, tsumi, lies in the very commonplace order of things we call everyday life. Jameson describes this non-diegetic, so to speak, moment of science fiction beyond its purely representational capacity to confront us with images of the future as the ability to, and I quote, defamiliarize and restructure our experience of our own present. It's Jameson's most infamous articulation, but also most fruitful and troubling intervention at the same time, that science fiction's deepest vocation is over and over again to demonstrate and to dramatize our incapacity to imagine the future, to body both through apparently full representations which prove on closer inspection to be structurally and constitutively impoverished, the atrophy in our time of what Marcuse has called the utopian imagination, the imagination of otherness and radical difference, to succeed by failure and to serve as unwitting and even unwilling vehicle for a mediation which, setting forth for the unknown, finds itself irrevocably mired into all too familiar and thereby becomes unexpectedly transformed into a contemplation of our own absolute limits. Put differently, According to Jameson, it is the capacity of science fiction to face us with our own incapacity to imagine the future. In the remaining time of my talk, I would like to present to you a close reading of the aforementioned science fiction novel Into Ice Age 4 by novelist Abe Kobo, which I consider a brilliant example of science fictional critical thought in terms of the above-mentioned definition of science fiction as thought. The novel, which was originally published as a series in the intellectual leftist journal Sekai from 1958 to 59, appeared in the socio-political context of the transition from the period of ideals to the period of dreams, and is therefore still strongly influenced by the opposition of the liberal democratic and communist ideal in Japan, itself being embedded into the global geopolitical constellation of what we now call the Cold War. Under the post-Leninist doctrine of a friendly coexistence of communism, socialism, or socialism and capitalism, a term first used by Khrushchev around 1955, the Cold War at that point had already assumed the shape of an economic and technological proxy war in the second half of the 1950s. Fought out particularly on the battleground of nuclear technology and unmanned and manned spaceflight, which made it into the history books under the term space race between the Soviet Union and the United States. This time was also the time of big science, or so-called big science, at non-governmental but government-supported think tanks or universities, and also the rise of information theory and cybernetics, which derived directly from the military-industrial complex of strategic and weaponry war research during World War II. Moreover, cybernetics had already crossed the disciplinary border between science and humanities in the 1950s, considered by its proponents on both sides of the disciplinary fence as the new universal science to bridge the widening gap between natural sciences and humanities. By applying concepts such as feedback, control, and information, not merely to machines any longer, but also to all kinds of social organizations, from companies or societies to the macroeconomic economies of whole nation states, cybernetics, starting out as a subfield of mathematics and statistics, turned into something more than just an applied science, becoming a certain and generally accepted paradigm infiltrating disciplines as wide as sociology, linguistics, urban planning, architecture, economics, or the political sciences. At its core lay the idea that the behavior of actions of any allegedly closed system, namely humans, groups, societies, economies, is not only observable, but also predictable and thus controllable. If one can obtain enough information about the possible outcome of a certain action. One of the most influential social psychologists at the time, Kurt Lewin, defined control of social groups as something that was based on, and I quote, feedback system which links a reconnaissance branch of the organization with the branches that do the action, so that a discrepancy between the desired and the actual direction leads automatically to a correction of actions or to a change of planning. The cybernetic goal was thus to get, as well as keep, systems, namely groups, companies, societies, and states, into a homeostatic condition, and thereby minimize or even negate contingency. In Japan, the most important works of the founding father of cybernetics, Norbert Wiener, were translated instantly upon their original publication already in the second half of the 1950s by Ikehara Shikao, a former doctoral student of Norbert Wiener at the MIT back in the 1930s. Abe's novel Into Ice Age 4 begins with a cryptic prelude describing a huge tidal wave heading for the Japanese coast. However, the significance of this event, a harbinger of an eventual flooding of the earth, remains unclear to the end of the narration. The protagonist, Professor Katsumi, is involved in the development of a forecasting machine in response to the completion of a Soviet computer named Moscow 1, which can predict events in the immediate future, namely weather forecasts and economic prognoses. Whereas computers in the real world of the 1950s were in fact mostly computers of the first generation, namely large vacuum tube calculators, calculation machines, which were programmed by reconnecting wires and fed with data from punch cards. The computer in the novel resembled the computer supercomputers of our days, which are able to perform high-speed performance computing. In Japan, at the time Abe was writing his novel, the Nippon Telegraph and Telephone Corporation, NTT, had in fact just completed the second Japanese computer of this earliest kind, called Musashi no number one, which Abe even went to see when conducting research for his book. In the novel, the narration takes a sudden turn already in the beginning when the Soviet Union announces the development of a new and even more powerful computer, Moscow 2, which predicts the, and this is from a Soviet perspective, unbelievably accommodating, collapse of the final capitalist state in exactly 84 years. The government of the United States, Japan's closest ally in reality in the 1950s, as well as in the novel, responds to this revelation by condemning such a political application of scientific resources and the announcement that it will refrain from using its own computers to predict political events. In a statement by American and Japanese scientists in reaction to the prognosis of a lurking communist world revolution, they denounced the Soviet forecasts as immoral, deterministic, indoctrinating, and anti-humanistic. In the novel, a young Japanese scientist who is a colleague of Katsumi says, "Perhaps it is natural that only communists who try to fit everything into a preconceived form should have a future predictably by a machine. Yet for those of us who create our future through the exercise of free will, such predictability doubtless serves little purpose. Even if one insists on projecting it, isn't it as transparent as glass? I fear more than anything that believe in prediction." And the official response by the US government reads as follows: "Prediction and divination are fundamentally different. In the first place, only that which has a moral basis can rightfully be called prediction. Putting such power in the hands of a machine can only be a denial of humanity." At first sight, Abe's science fiction novel appears to be a rather straightforward criticism of the ideological nature of communist ideology and the unwavering belief in the predictability of whole national economies in the post-Stalinist Soviet Union in particular, because the supercomputers of the Soviets in the novel are simply predicting the kind of future that communist ideology foresees anyhow, namely a communist world revolution. It might be interesting to know that in reality, cybernetics and information theory, despite first being rigorously refused as a so-called bourgeois science in the Soviet Union, posing a threat to the statutes of Marxism-Leninism as a universal science, and particularly undermining the idea of the five-year plans for the development of the national economy of the Soviet Union, which were rather often unrealistic goals formulated by the State Planning Committee, Gosplan, that prognosis of a likely development finally found the acceptance of the socialist and communist scholarly world, being since then considered not only as an accurate method for the measurement and calculation of the outcome and computation of the five-year plans, but were also well received in the humanities and the social sciences, most and foremost in social linguistics in the Soviet Union as well. However, Abe's novel goes in fact beyond a mere critique of post-Stalinist Soviet society, but rather belongs to a much more multifaceted work of science fiction, comparable to that of the Strugatsky brothers, which, as Frederick Jameson asserts, and I quote, "moves in a space beyond the facile and obligatory reference to the two rival social systems, and instead criticizes both the Western notion of infinite industrial progress of a non-political type and the Stalinist notion of socialism as the natural development of the forces of production." This becomes particularly clear towards the end of the book, when it is eventually revealed that the protagonist that the image of the wave running towards Japan depicted at the beginning of the book is in fact part of a prediction made by the computer Katsumi invented, which was used to predict Japan's future despite the official prohibition to use the computer without Katsumi's knowledge. Foreseeing the dawn of a fourth inter-ice age and the flooding of most of the Earth's surface in Japan. It is a biologist called Professor Yamamoto, whom, together with a group of other scientists, including Katsumi's own research assistants, not only secretly used the Japanese computer to predict the future, but who also have been working on a genetic engineering project to develop mammals suitable for work in undersea colonies in response to the prediction, using premature fetuses from abortions to prepare humanity for a life under the sea after the flooding. Furthermore, it is revealed to Katsumi that this project is also not sanctioned by the Japanese government, but is run secretly by a group of businessmen and lower bureaucrats whom founded the so-called Society for the Development of Submarine Colonies in order to prepare the Japanese society for the catastrophe. At this point, it dawns upon Katsumi that the ability of computers to predict future encroaches on freedom and individuality, not only in an allegedly outright ideological system such as the Soviet Union, but also in the supposedly free world of a capitalist liberal democracy, such as Japan, since the bright and lofty picture of the future predicted by the Japanese computer, depicted in a very prosaic tone in Abe's novel, namely a world of happy and satisfied submarine humans called Equans, differs significantly from the future actively brought about by the aforementioned Society for the Development of Submarine Colonies, which is one based on a ruthless genetic engineering and colonization of the sea, undertaken by a conglomerate of lower state officials and capitalist entrepreneurs who, and I quote from the book, are actually planning of making a lot of money from this instead of forking out fund merely for the sake of the future, as Katsumi's antagonist admits at some point. Katsumi realizes that this group of scientists and capitalists had in fact created a human zoo of genetically engineered underwater slaves of so-called colonials, having neither their own government nor statesmen. Moreover, in the process of genetic manipulation, the Equans created by this cruel enterprise have turned into machine-like creatures due to a transmitted genetic defect, having a significantly altered inner emotion life, being unable to love and cry. Not only that they are forced to work in factories most of the time, the education they receive is also limited to classes in science and engineering, excluding subjects that would teach them something about their own identity and origin, such as history, geography, or social studies. The vision of the group of scientists, bureaucrats, and capitalists, a combination strikingly similar to the structure of the so-called Iron Triangle, of ministerial bureaucracy, LDP politicians, and large enterprises in Japan that shaped Japan's post-war economy in a rather state-guided, some critics would even say socialist manner, is a purely utilitarian one. Playing off the short-term sacrifice of genetically manipulated Equans as slave workers against the long-term benefit of the project for humanity as a whole. Eventually, it becomes obvious that from the perspective of the conglomerate of businessmen, scientists, and bureaucrats, the utopian prediction of populating the sea can be brought about only as a permutated form of this utopia in the shape of a dystopian submarine capitalism, necessitating the creation of a new human in order to realize the prognosis, just as much as communism could only be realized merely as a permutated, namely actually existing, real existierend, form in the countries where Marx's demands and empirical reality diverged, such as the German Democratic Republic, Poland, or Cuba. Obviously, according to Abe, the realization of the utopia of aquatic existence necessarily turns into a dystopia as immoral, determining, indoctrinating, and anti-humanistic as the communist prediction was accused of in the beginning of the book, if left to the hand of capitalists. Abe's novel could thus be considered as what Jameson has described, and I quote, radical, systematic break with the predicted colonized future which is simply a prolongation of our own capitalist present in the form of a dystopia, and thus as a disruption from the present, which pulls one out of the continuity of the everyday, as mentioned in the beginning of my talk. In a dispute between Katsumi and his colleague Tanomogi, the latter advances the view that the future does not realize itself, but in fact needs to be actively induced according to a blueprint, a plan, or a prognosis, in a liberal capitalist system, just like in an authoritarian communist system. In the following dialogue, Tanomogi explains to Katsumi that a merely mathematically computed quantitative prognosis of the future necessarily needs to be translated back into what he calls qualitative reality by praxis, namely that forecasting the future in fact still necessitates to actively pursue action in the predetermined direction. Programming, and this is Tanomogi in the novel, programming is simply the operation of reducing the qualitative to the quantitative. If you don't once again synthesize quantitative into qualitative, you'll never grasp the future. You, Katsumi, you could only consider the future as a mechanical or linear extension of quantitative facts. As a result, you were able, conceptually, to take great interest in forecasting the future, but you were quite incapable of standing the real future. Katsumi responds by harshly criticizing that this monopolization of the future would in fact negate different futures. At this point, Eber brilliantly turns the criticism that was initially directed towards the authoritarian Soviet forecast of a future world revolution at the beginning of the book against the handling of predictions in capitalist democracies, by letting Katsumi say that a fait accompli realization of submarine capitalism is nothing but fascism in itself, giving a statesman divine power. I'll try to draw at least some conclusions out of what I've said and give a little outlook on what I've been doing, what I will do in the future. Hence, what Abe actually wanted to criticize in his novel is the fact that prognoses inhere the danger of its monopolization, irrespective of the political system. Because any prediction, and I quote from the book, influences the future, as the protagonist states at one point. Authoritative prognoses in planned economies, as well as in a theoretically free market economy, embody the danger to turn into supposedly inherent constraints eventually, namely a political necessity to which an alternative, a different future, is then hardly imaginable. Or, as one of the characters puts it in Abe's novel, stating that already the thought that political prediction is possible is itself political in nature. Political or economic prognoses are nothing but fictional expectations or imagined futures, says sociologist Jens Beckert, and actors acting upon a prognosis necessarily act as if the future would unfold in the predicted way. However, one might argue that if one can't predict, or plausibly contend that one is able to predict, with certainty the outcome of a certain event, such a power would not only curtail drastically an individual's choice, but would also set a limit to a liberal moral system based on free choice and responsibility, and thus shake liberal democracy to its conceptual foundations. Interestingly, it was at about the same time that Abe published his novel that leftist intellectuals in Western Germany raised their criticism against the popularity of cybernetic future studies or futurology, of US American origin, describing it as, and I quote, an Americanization of the future and as an apology of the present, namely a method of social engineering being part of a general strategy of projectable crisis prevention, but in fact leaving things the way they are by hiding behind the veil of the ever new. Quote end. Accordingly, as we have seen, looking back at science fiction of the past does not simply mean to look at representations of futures past, namely historical times, which can be grasped by way of differentiating past and future, or in anthropological terms, and I use Carl Selleck's terms again, experience and expectation, expressed in these futurologies. but are also works of radically different utopian imaginations provoking disruptive moments in the endless repetition of the everyday. This is why science fiction, or at least science fiction of a better quality, namely speculative but scientifically supported and critical projections of futures in the sense of extrapolations from the respective presence, possess a political meaning which one could describe as the non-diegetic element of science fiction beyond a particular science fictional narration. From this perspective, Abbe's novel is no exception, since it refers to cybernetics, which in itself is not only a historical phenomenon to be researched and studied from a historiographical perspective, but also produced a discourse projecting and imagines a place or state in the future outside the narration, namely a form of knowledge or thought opening up horizons of utopian or dystopian possibilities. In Japan, cybernetics were decisive for the development of various applied technological fields in Japan, ranging from robotics, feedback control, and automatization of industrial production and distribution, brought to life the just-in-time system created by Toyota already in the 1960s, and the introduction of the point-of-sale system in convenience stores in the 1980s, all developed into the theoretical backbone of infrastructural sectors such as automotive traffic regulation or the automatization of train ticket sales and inspection already in the 1960s. As a certain thought style or Denkstil, in the sense of Karl Mannheim, the cybernetic ideas of regulation, control, and feedback lingered on particularly in the information society paradigm emerging in Japan in the 1960s. It was particularly the ideas of information networks based on feedback control and man-machine interaction, which played a key role in the conceptual repertoire of the information society discourse. The fact that one only rarely finds direct references to the original works of the founding fathers of cybernetics in the main works that established the information society paradigm could be considered as an evidence for the fact that cybernetics in the 1960s had already turned into a generally accepted point of view beyond a specific scientific field. The marriage of information society discourse, cybernetics, futurology, and science fiction had its heyday in Japan at the time of the Osaka Expo in 1970, which turned out to become an even more efficient cybernetic control machine and information entertainment machine than the Montreal Expo 3 years before, presenting to its 65 million visitors the organization as a version of a utopian future in a mixture of multimedia spectacle, popular culture, and cybernetics. In the digital age, when computers have developed from a large room-sized calculating machines in the 1950s and mainframe and personal computers in the 1970s and 80s into mobile and connected devices, smartphones, tablets, and notebooks, the individual finds himself in the middle of a constant flow of information and networked feedback. Mechanisms of portable, or I might even say somaticized, so to speak, media. Particularly with the rise of social media in the mid-2000s, which run through the individual in ways that mainstream media does not, every individual leaves digital traces that can be compiled into comprehensive pictures of both individual and group behavior. Based on the richness of what is sometimes called big data, it is basically possible to not only calculate and better control possible futures based on feedback loops, but also predict future behavior on a real-time basis if one is in the possession of enough computer power. Thereby, the process beginning in modern times when the idea of progress appeared as, and I quote from Koselleck, the first generally historical concept which reduced the temporal difference between experience and expectation to a single concept, somehow reaches its peak, because the idea of continuous progress has been replaced by the idea of instantaneization of information flows and communication. Thus, one might even argue that the existing temporal gap between the space of experience and horizon of expectation created by the loops of feedback is contracted in the digital era. Nowadays, so to speak, the future has arrived in the present in so far that the future is to a lesser extent considered as something calculable and predictable any longer, but as something that is always already part of the present in the form of real-time simulations. From a philosophical viewpoint, at least three topics I think could be considered interesting in Abe Kobo's work. From the perspective of political philosophy, it is of interest that the story is overshadowed by an apocalyptic state of exception caused by the lurking natural disaster. From an ethical or ontological or epistemological viewpoint, the novel offers a discussion of transhumanism in the shape of genetically engineered transhuman equines and post-democracy, namely the unshakable belief in cybernetic predictions and planability. And it is, I think, these three philosophically relevant topics that I would like to study in my current research project on science fiction here at the EKGF. So we have those two axes. One is that we'll try to deal with three concepts, and then we have the timeline from the cybernetic computer age to what we now call digital media and social media. And this is just a few of the works I will be looking at in the future. Thank you very much.